To concentrate upon the word love. Love under the microscope. Let's try to understand this phenomenon that all of us at some time get involved in, and I hope a lot of the time. Some key verses. First of all, greater love has no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. This comes from John 15, 13. I have the wrong reference up there. It's not 1 John, it's the Gospel of John. And then this particular verse, love never fails. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. How come that in our world that is so obsessed with love, we have witnessed the increasing relationship failure, domestic violence, the abuse of elders, adults, children? It goes on and on and on. So much so that there is such a tragedy that our youth today don't even want to venture into marriage because they're afraid it will not last anyway. That's what we live with. So we will examine this tragedy and try to spark some hope for our homes and for our families. It is a tragic failure of even our homes and families, especially in our North American culture. So even in Christian circles, we have this rupture of relationships. Are there answers? Of course. One of the ugliest things that you can read about and disgusting activities that shows the depravity of the human heart was the slave trade. And it wasn't just in the United States. It happens in all of the, or it happened in all of the world. There are records of it happening. And there is nothing so sad as the slave market, that apex of darkness, when people would bid just as though you were buying a plow or an ox or a cage of chickens. Bid for a person, buy them, take them home, and own them, abuse them, work them, even kill them, and nobody really cared. At least in Scripture, there was one time when there was a light of hope and joy in that situation. It happened in the life of a prophet called Hosea. He had married a prostitute. He took her out of that life, that shameful life, and brought redemption to her, brought her into his home, gave her a status among the people, a place of honor as the wife of the prophet. And she lived with him for a period of time. But then she became disoriented. Somehow or other, she became one of those desperate housewives where she was tired of the routine and was drawn back to the old life. And the attractiveness of of being wanted by different people, she made a good living at it for a while. But when the attractiveness was gone, nobody wanted her anymore. She found herself in debt, could not pay her debts, and was being sold again, or this time now on the slave auction. And so the neighbors watched as Hosea leaves his house and he's going to the slave auction where his wife was going to be sold, or his previous wife. And everybody's saying, well, there he goes. He's going to get his revenge. He'll watch her being sold and he will say, well done. That's what she deserves. Well, we're going to leave the story there and come back at the end of the sermon to pick it up from there. Love. Love. It's the most misunderstood and misused word in our English language today. It's pawned off as being synonymous with sex, erotic behavior. It's used to promote everything from movies, songs, drugs, cars, tires, breakfast cereals, toilet paper, go on and on. They talk about you love this, you love that. It goes crazy. So this morning we're going to try to distinguish between human affection or love as understood by our culture and God's kind of love. About 10 years ago, I spoke in one of our churches here in the city on this very subject. And when I was done, one of the members of the worship team, with tears in his eyes, came to me. Had I understood this 5 years earlier, my marriage would be intact today. But I lost it. I lost it. He cried. We prayed together. He was not able to recover what he had lost. But at least he found forgiveness, some light. So anyway, let's begin. So I turn first of all to the book of Timothy, chapter 3. And listen carefully to these words. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers. Isn't that crazy? Terrible times because people are lovers? Well, that's right. That's what it says. But people will be lovers of themselves. Lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. Have nothing to do with them. This describes our generation as well, doesn't it? And we are in those last times. And given the tragic record of even Christian folks losing their marriages, it destroys hope for our younger generation. So let's do a little fun thing here this morning, all right? Are you ready for this? I want you to respond. Who do you love? God. Well, glad to hear that. That's what, the Lord. Who else do you love? I'm glad somebody says my wife, because some of you already got a poke in the ribs because you didn't speak up right away, okay? I love my wife. I love my husband. Who else do you love? Our kids, grandkids, great-grandkids. We love them all, don't we? Yeah. But when we move outside the circle of the church and think beyond that, what else do you love? What was that? Oh, yeah, my Jeep. Sure, yeah. My pastor would say, I love my pickup because I can make U-turns even over the curbs. I hear someone say, I love shrimp. McKay, Minister of Defense, I think he was, when he was betrayed by his girlfriend, went back to Nova Scotia. He said, I love my dog because my dog doesn't betray me. I love my dog. I love my cat. It goes on and on like that. What is this all about? I love mashed potatoes and gravy. My motorcycle, my skidoo, my Jeep, someone said, okay. What's the denominator? The common denominator in this is this. I love this because it gives me pleasure. Gives me a nice, warm feeling. It feels good. Now, there's nothing wrong with this emotion. Actually, it's God-given. It's part of our makeup. So there's nothing wrong with me to say, I won't say it. Let you say it. I love my car. I don't like cars. I enjoy trading for them, but then I get disgusted with them because they give you trouble. But anyway, where do we go with this? it's an emotion that's understandable. As a matter of fact, when that young lady she's not young anymore now. When she walked down the hallway and said, "Can I help you?" I didn't realize that a year later I would see her coming in and my heart would flutter. I had fallen in love with her. I recognize later on that much of that was very selfish because I was thinking of what she could bring to me rather than what I could do for her. See, that's where the fallacy comes. But there's nothing wrong with that emotion. As a matter of fact, it's rather exciting. Let me read for you, and I don't know whether I have read very often from the Song of Solomon in church. So I'm going to scare you a little bit. Chapter 4, beginning with verse 1. Now listen to this. This is Solomon talking about the girlfriend. "How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats." I don't say that. But I can understand it's like a flock of goats coming down the hill and it's nice and wavy. Okay, so that's it. "Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming up from the washing. Each has its twin." So for every tooth on top, there's a tooth on the bottom. That's what it's saying, really. Okay. I mean, she has perfect teeth. "Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields." She obviously had a beautiful necklace. Okay. Just all kinds of wonderful things about her. Let's see. I have to skip some of this because you don't want to even hear it. Verse 7 says, "All beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you." That's the kicker. What happens when people can't stand each other anymore? What happened to that? Then I'll just slip over to chapter 5. Here, verse 8. Now, she's talking about him. "O daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my lover, what will you tell him? Tell him I am faint with love." I'm just about swooning. "My lover is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is pure as gold. His hair is wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice." All spice, aftershave lotion. "Yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies dripping with myrrh." And she goes on and on. Verse 16, "His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my lover. This is my friend. O daughters of Jerusalem." Now, as beautiful as human affection is, it has severe limits. And if you don't recognize that, you're in trouble. Because it doesn't take much change. And sometimes that change happens without you even noticing it. It turns to apathy, ignoring the other person, and eventually you may even get to the place where you hate them. I've seen it happen over and over again. Then I hear something like this: "He's a beast. I don't love him anymore. I can't stand her." I've heard that. What happened? She has changed. When I met her, she was a size 8. Look now. When I met him, he had hair. He treated me like a lady. I've heard that over and over again. Relying on human affection alone, that relationship is bound to fail. Now, let's help ourselves understand this. Maybe using an illustration that came out of Anchorage, Alaska. It was in the newspaper. Wilda Mae Harmon was a beautiful blonde nurse working in the local hospital there. Her husband was an Air Force pilot. They were the envy of the social class whenever they'd all get together. This couple was so beautiful. She was gorgeous. He was handsome. And one wintry morning, she's going to work in their little VW Beetle. She drives over the hill, and as she comes across over the top of the hill and starts down the other side, here is a truck coming in her lane, passing another vehicle. There's nowhere to go because on either side there are rocks and banks. She puts on her brakes and slides and slams into that truck. And she didn't know whether she was floating away on a cloud or whether she was dreaming, but she thought she heard someone say, "Do you think she's alive?" They picked her up, took her with the ambulance to the hospital where she would have gone to work normally. Left flesh and bone and muscle in the snowbank. And after multiple surgeries, her face was still distorted. Her handsome husband took a long look at her one day and knew that she would be disfigured for life, spun around on his heel, and walked out of her life. And you say, how awful. Let me tell you, I've seen people walk out of each other's lives for far less reason than that. It happens, unfortunately. So let's come to a definition of human affection, or love as our culture understands it. So in this case, when it comes to love as in the human cultural context, love is a pleasant emotion, an excitement, an exhilarating feeling that is generated by another person or object. Now, that's our understanding of culture, the love in our culture. A pleasant emotion, an excitement, exhilarating feeling, and it's generated by that other person. Given enough change, the emotion is gone, the good feeling evaporates, and in some cases turns to resentment and even anger. And if that's all you have, your relationship is bankrupt, or in German, it's kaput. And in Portuguese, it's terminou. It's done. Over with. It's well expressed by a song, a country western. Now, I'm going to be country western this morning. I should have a guitar here. But it's there. Okay. Please. Please release me, let me go. I don't love you anymore. To waste our lives would be a sin. Please release me so I can love again and again and again and find somebody else and find somebody else because you can't make me happy anymore. Please release me. Where am I at here? I have found a new love, dear. I will always want her near. Her lips are warm while yours are cold. Please release me. It doesn't rhyme, so maybe I got the last line wrong. So I can love again. What happened? Human affection, the love of our culture, promotes it. It's gone when that person can no longer generate a thrill in you. Did you get that? The pressure, the responsibility is on that other person to make me feel good and excited. And when they are not able to do that anymore, then I assume that love is gone, the relationship is irreconcilable. Let me give you an example. When I pastored in Michigan, one of the elders in my church, and I had 16 deacons. This man was a multimillionaire, lived in a fantastically beautiful home, was married to a lovely, godly woman, beautiful person. They had a beautiful boat for Lake Michigan. They had all of this rental property, had a plumbing business with about 25 employees. Money was coming in left and right, and she came down with an illness that would end in a nursing home. What happened? Well, a number of things, but this is what took the cake here. He talked his wife into two things. Number one, she would sign off on all finances of the family and their business. And then she would sign divorce papers, which he said was on paper only, this so that the state of Michigan would have to pay for her nursing home care. Now, that nursing home care was only pocket change for him because he had all of this money. But no, he talked her into this, and she was dumb enough to sign all these papers, and she was left penniless. And in a matter of a few months, he remarried and turned his back totally on that situation. Some of the people from my church went over to that nursing home every week to help do her hair, help her do her fingernails, and take care of her and get her a package of gum if she wanted it. Human affection is a pleasant feeling or emotion that is generated by another person or object. When she could no longer do that for him, he was through with that marriage. Now, how about divine love? How do we understand that? God's kind of love. How is it different? Well, it's directly opposite from human affection. Whereas in human affection, the person you love has the responsibility of keeping you excited and exhilarated. Now, however, the responsibility rests on the lover, not the object of that love. Get it from the Bible. I'm going to do something now that we can all participate in. We all know John chapter 3, verse 16. So what we're going to do is going to recite it real slow, and when I drop my hand, we stop, okay? Are you ready? For God so loved the world that he... Stop. That he... If he loved according to our culture, God so loved the world that he had a warm feeling in him when he looked at us, and he couldn't help but fall in love with us because we excited him so. No. If anything, God was disgusted with us. He was abhorred with our waywardness. Do you understand that? So, it wasn't that attracted him, no. As a matter of fact, it was not an attraction at all, but an act of mercy. So let's start it again. Let's go a little bit farther together. For God so loved the world that he gave. Stop. He gave. Action. That's what love is. Action. What did he give? He gave his only begotten son. Now, who was God's son? He was God, part of the Trinity. So God was giving himself. What for? in sacrifice so that whosoever believes on him should not perish but have everlasting life. So how do we understand it? God gave himself to meet our desperate, legitimate need. That's love. God's kind of love. So if we were to define divine love, it would be this: a commitment on the part of the lover to meet the legitimate needs of that other person, whether you feel like it or not. Get it? You meet the legitimate need of that person whether you feel like it or not. Don't look for feelings to express love. I've done a lot of counseling, seen some amazing things. I have met couples that if looks could kill, I'd have had two corpses in my office. Anger, hatred, attitude, just get me out of this relationship. So what happened? Did you love him once? Did you love her once? Oh, yeah, but they're not the same anymore. Then a list of complaints come. No nice, warm, fuzzy feelings anymore, only bitterness, anger. So love, as they understood it, was gone. It's out the window. So then we start to teach them from the beginning how to love God's way. That it's not a feeling, but a commitment. A commitment on the part of the lover to meet the needs of his spouse. Do this, and incidentally, emotions will return. A man said to his pastor, and he was looking for this warm, fuzzy feeling, he said, "Give me a verse of scripture whereby I can love my wife better." So the pastor says, "Well, Ephesians 5:25 says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her." Oh, he said, "That's too difficult. Can't do that." Well, then how about Luke 10, verse 27? "Love your neighbor as yourself," since she's your closest neighbor. "Why don't you just love her?" Well, he says, "That's too difficult yet too." He says, "Well, okay, then let's, how about Luke 6, 27? Love your enemies." It's the same command, love. Do for. Do good to those, Jesus said, who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. Have you ever prayed to God and asked him to help you love somebody? And after you've prayed, you expected that nice warm feeling to come for that person, and it hasn't come, and you said, "Well, God didn't answer my prayer." What happened? God's kind of love is not based on feeling. You know something? I'm so glad that God didn't say I have to like everybody. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of people I will probably never like, but I can love. Now, that seems like a contradiction, but it's the truth. Because love is doing for people what they need, whether you feel like it or not. Let's get back to that. I remember walking through the leprosy ward at Mbingo Hospital in Cameroon. And I'll tell you, I didn't like it. It became obnoxious to me. Shaking hands with fingerless hands. Touching people whose faces had been marred, the nose is gone, the ears are gone, the smell of rotting flesh. And I accompanied Dr. Zimmerman, who put his arms around these people and hugged them and patted them and shook their hands and touched their face. And I saw love in action. It was an amazing thing. A trip to a rescue mission doesn't make you like what you see. The smell of body odor, dirt, alcoholism, They can overwhelm you. You can become disgusted, but you can love for Christ. Gerald and our daughter, when she and her husband were working with Chain of Love in Brazil, this work that touched the lives of so many street kids and continues on. She was celebrating her birthday that day, and I was already dressed because they had reservations at a restaurant to go out and celebrate her birthday when the phone rang. And social worker said, "Geraldine, you have to come immediately. We have found three kids on the garbage dump, and they're desperate. Their parents had been arrested and taken away because of drug dealing." And she said, these kids need some help. So she had to take off her nice dress, get back into her grubbies, drive out to the garbage dump, and together with the social service person, take these little kids to Chain of Love. She spent the next several hours scrubbing them. And it wasn't just one bath, it was a second bath, a third, before the smell of feces was gone from their bodies. She spent time digging the chiggers out of their skin, out from under their skin, treating the infected feet where they had walked in the garbage and it was still smoldering and they had burned themselves. It was midnight when she got home. Did she feel like doing that? No. Why did she do it? Because this is love. She had the privilege, and I met those kids. She had the privilege of singing in the worship team with the oldest one. She saw all of them baptized. And we witnessed the birth of one of her children, and she's had two since then. Because she was married to one of the biological sons of one of the house parents. It was beautiful. But this was love in action. Let me illustrate the power of divine love, and we'll move toward the end of this message. It was a blended marriage. The husband died, left his wife with two little girls. As part of the same congregation, the wife died and left the husband with two little boys. Very unusual situation. And they felt drawn to each other. They thought, well, maybe we can make a marriage. So they got married. And then the mother was disturbed. She was having difficulty with the boys. So she went to the pastor and she said, "Look, I'm not sure I can handle this anymore. I don't know how to do this. These boys, I have such a wonderful feeling with my daughters. We get along so well. But these boys are just, they're so tough to work with. They disobey, they're rude, they have even bitten me. What am I supposed to do with these kids?" Frustration, despair. And so the pastor explained to her that she would probably never have the same feelings for these two boys as she has for the girls. Because those are her biological girls. She gave birth to them. But even though you don't have the same feeling, you can treat them the same way and express love to them, and pointed out that those boys are probably deeply hurt with the loss of their mother, and they're missing that tender touch, that hug, and that someone saying to them, "I love you, I love you." Can you practice that just the way you do with your girls? Do it with those boys. And she said, I will try, even though the feeling isn't there. And so she did that. Prayed for them. When you give them a bath, give them a hug, pat them on the back, say, "I love you, I love you, I love you." Well, she was back at the pastor's office not too long after that. It was amazing, because what happened was one of the boys hurt himself out in the yard, came tearing into the house, and ran to his new mother, into her arms. And as she's patting him on the back and then soothing him and calming the hurt that he experienced, his little quivering voice said, "I love you, Mother." It was so powerful. You see, it was action. It wasn't feeling. This kind of love never fails. So when people come for counseling, insisting that the feeling is all gone, that resentment and anger rules the relationship, we tell them, now we'll teach you to love God's way. Begin by meeting the legitimate need of your spouse. And it's interesting, I've seen folks afterwards fall in love again, the emotional part. As a matter of fact, and this was among older people, they almost became embarrassing as they sat in church and held hands and hugged each other like a couple of teenagers. It's beautiful, isn't it? God restores those things. Does it work? You bet it does. In contrast to the elder of my Michigan church, we had a family reunion where my cousin brought his invalid wife. He carried her out of the car into the meeting room. And every 30 minutes, when we were all milling around and having good time and playing horseshoes and softball, he would, every 30 minutes, run back into that room and make sure she was taken care of. There was absolutely nothing she could do for him. Nothing she could do for him. But he was treating her royally. You know, that really spoke to my heart, because I had thought of him as not being quite equal to the rest of us because of his religious affiliation. He showed me the love of God. So I say once again, to define God's kind of love, it's a commitment on the part of the lover to meet the legitimate needs of another person, whether you feel like it or not. So we go back to the auction market, okay? So Hosea knows his wife is being auctioned off. She's really messed up. And so the neighbors think, now he's going to stand there and gloat over this and say, you get what you deserve. It's good that you're being sold as a slave. But to the amazement of everybody else, when the bidding starts, Hosea starts to bid as well and keeps right in there. And keeps bidding until he's finally the only one left. And he pays the price, both in money and in humility. And then he goes and takes his faithless wife by the hand and leads her home and restores her to dignity and a new chance to live. That's God's love. That's the kind of love that you and I need. This is how we know what love is. John 2:16. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for others. Love one another the same way. This love never fails. Lord, teach us to love with your kind of love. You have loved us in such an amazing way. And we pray that we might be gracious and kind to one another, particularly within the confines of our homes, with our church fellowship, but beyond that. Help us, Lord, not to get confused about our emotions, but help us, Lord, to truly, truly respond with your kind of love. And we'll give you the praise and the thanks for Jesus' sake.
Amen.